So, the first thing to say is that the most important part of discipleship has probably already happened, and that is the eating together. In a book that I've been reading about fresh expressions, a couple of bishops going around the UK and in the US looking at fresh expressions, what they found was that there was one thing that they all had in common. It wasn't liturgy, it wasn't scripture, it wasn't mission in the tradition, you know what I mean? It was food. That was the thing that united them. And it seems as though that's a really quite a big theme going forward in terms of churches working together that are growing, that there is food involved. Because obviously, for obvious reasons, as you know, it breaks down barriers and you talk and you enjoy yourselves. And it's always been like that in the church. Food has always been foundational to what we do in discipleship. And I think that's something that we could learn a lot from. I wonder if you could just turn to the person to your left, and I need to do this to start on right, you know. And say, and just in 15 seconds, tell them what you think discipleship is. Go for it. Off you go. What is discipleship? Thanks, folks. We don't have a huge amount of time, so I wonder if someone could just shout out one or two words, just anything at all from anywhere in the room. What is it?
Follower.
Sorry?
Follower.
Okay, about being a follower. Yeah.
Learner.
A learner. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Growing with Jesus.
Growing with Jesus.
Nurturing.
Nurturing. That's fantastic. In the tricky thing about discipleship is that there is no word discipleship in the Bible. That is something that we have come up with, the word discipleship, a noun that expresses what disciples do. But there is no biblical reference to discipleship, which is tricky because it means that we all put our own view on what it is. And the word actually is mathetes, which many of you will know. Apologies if this is, for a lot of you, it's sort of reviewing. But that word mathetes is used in the New Testament, and it's picked up on a word that's in Greek, particularly in the Greek world. It was a concept that was there. So there was two twin ideas with that, mainly, certainly in the Greek world, and then it was developed, obviously, by Jesus. But the two ideas were, first and foremost, it was an apprenticeship. It was an apprenticeship model. And so you learned from someone who was further along the journey, and there was a very practical sense. But what happened was, gradually, it became a little bit more based on a kind of a professor and pupil kind of model. Particularly the Stoics in Greek kind of thought, they turned it slightly, so it was more of a sort of an intellectual thing. And I think what's really interesting is that we in the church have tended to stick with that model, the sort of professor/student model, and somehow during the course of time, the apprentice part of it has sort of been lost a little bit. Well, that's sort of my observation. And so I just want to look tonight at how we deal with that and how we address that whole issue. Want to, again, turn to your partner, whoever they are. Now, this is important that you, this sounds really easy, but what I want you to do is this. I want one of you to be the explainer and the other person to be the person who has to do what they ask them to do. And I want the person who's the learner not to assume you don't know anything. Okay. Assume you don't know anything. You've never done this before in your life. So the person who is explaining, I want you to, in words, without any physical demonstration, I want you to explain, only in words, to the person to your left, how to tie their shoelace. Are you ready together? Yeah. So turn to the person. So one of you has to be the explainer. You cannot use any demonstrations. You can't refer to a shoe. It's all got to be said. Okay. Are we ready? Go for it. And you actually, the person who is learning, you have to do it. You have to do it. So you have to listen to their instructions and follow their instructions as they explain it. Sorry. Yeah, you have to also do it. But assume you don't know anything. Okay. If you don't have shoelaces, then... Sorry. Pretend. Okay, well done, everybody. Okay, now, I want you just to reflect briefly. I want you to reflect on that process and tell me, first of all, was it easy to break it down and explain verbally what to do in terms of teaching someone to tie their shoelace? Just using words. Was it easy? Some found it easy. Some found it quite difficult. Okay, the second question is, listening to their instructions, assuming you know nothing, was it easy or difficult to, without any demonstration, just following the instructions? Was that easy to follow the instructions? Okay, so most people would say no. It's a really interesting process, isn't it? You know, we think something as simple as tying our shoelace, and we think, yeah, easy. You take away any practical demonstration, any life experience, and you put it into words, and actually it's quite a tricky thing to do. What are all the terms? What's the lace and the tongue of the shoe and the... How do you explain, you know, what's the word? What would you use? And quite a lot of the time in the church, that's sort of what we do. To a certain extent, what we try to explain what, you know, we explain things in that way. We use words, and we expect people to understand. And that's fine to an extent, particularly if we're of a particular mindset. How many people here, you've probably done this exercise, but oral learners and visual learners and kinesthetic learners. So just to explain, an oral learner is someone who hears and learns well. A visual learner is someone who sees and has to often do diagrams and pictures when they're listening. And a kinesthetic learner is someone who learns by doing. Now, we're all a bit of a combination. But if you had to choose one of those three, who would be an oral learner who likes to listen? Okay, so there's a few there. Who would be a visual learner who has to make little diagrams and that kind of thing? Okay, about a third. And who are kinesthetic learners who learn by doing? Okay, that's brilliant. Okay. Discipleship is... perhaps involves all of those things, but it is, and it's a combination of those things, but there has to be that kinesthetic element to it. So, partly because from the age of when we're born, the process is very, very much kinesthetic, isn't it? We're told to try this, and then if we do it well, we get affirmed, well done, you know, and we learn how to walk, and then we learn how to do all that kind of stuff. And right from the time we're born, that's how it works. But then we come into church, and somehow that's, some of that's been lost. And we've become much more focused on words and on sort of the explanation, but maybe not quite on the follow-up and how we sort of assess and how we work with people. I recently started playing tennis again. It's my kind of luxury. I play in a local club. And I have always had a weakness in tennis, and that is my forehand. I don't know if anyone play tennis a little bit. So I've always been fine with backhand. I've always had a good serve. But forehand is really quite tricky. And I joined with these, because I only play during the day because I'm a single parent and I can't play in the evening, it's tricky. So I play, and I'm always playing with sort of retirees. They're my peers on the court. It's me and three retirees. But they're normally pretty good, actually, and they're quite consistent because they play a lot, because they're retirees. But I was saying to John, one of them, I said, John, you know, I've never quite nailed my forehand. I either hit it too hard or I can't quite get that, you know, what is it? What do you do? And he said to me, well, he said, and I said, I'm thinking of getting some coaching, you know, because there's a coach there. And he said, well, I'm one of the coaches. I said, really? So I said, can you help me with my forehand? So he said, yeah, well, what you do is, you know, you probably learn, and I was always trying to do a lot of sort of topspin, which is actually quite tricky and difficult. He said, now what they're doing is they're teaching kids just to start by sort of slowing it down so the ball doesn't fly over the end. And you lose a bit of power, and you don't look like a pro, but you keep the ball in. And he said, try that. And so over the last month or two, I've just been practicing when I'm on the court with him, changing my forehand and trying to do that. It's really difficult to do something. I've been playing tennis for 30 years, I suppose, and I've learned how to do it in a particular way. My mum taught me how to play tennis. And there's certain things I do well. I've got a really good serve because I'm tall and it's easy, and I've got a pretty good backhand, but I've never been able to get to it. He said, okay, do this. And slowly I'm feeling... and. Quite often I do it the wrong way, or I snap it in a match, or, you know, when we play. But it was John who was playing alongside me. We're having fun together. It's not that he is this great professor. I'm not reading about him in a book. He's actually just someone I'm playing tennis with, except he knows a bit more than me because he's a coach. And he's really good at explaining it. He said, yeah, you've just got to sort of work on that. And so I've been working on that. And the model of discipleship is a bit like that, I think, that this sort of apprenticeship model of discipleship, in that as Christians, we are not experts. We're not like professor. And particularly clergy, we quite like to take the role of expert. But the reality is that we all have a master builder, and we're the apprentices. On a bad day, sometimes we have to say, just remember, I'm an apprentice, I'm learning. I'm in a learning place. And in that sort of example with John, where we're doing it together, that's sort of the model, it seems to me, in the Bible. Doesn't Jesus take a group of disciples and they do things together for those 3 years? And then, of course, there's all this, the sort of stories of the Apostle Paul and what happens in the early church, but also right through the Old Testament, Elijah and Elisha. And, you know, just if you look down, there's all these different relationships where it's sort of a, it's kind of an apprentice thing going on, isn't there? I read this book by Alison Morgan recently, which is a good book. And in it, she has this fantastic definition of discipleship, which is, what is discipleship? Well, it's lots of different things, isn't it? But she says, in three words, apprenticeship in community. That's how she defines it. In other words, it is not a hugely academic exercise, although that helps. It is not about, you know, getting a degree in theology, although that helps. It is not about mastering something in an intellectual sense, although that helps. It is apprenticeship in a group of people. And she says the strapline there is the plural of disciple is church. In other words, discipleship is something that we do together as a church community. And I really like that definition of discipleship, because it sort of takes away the idea that it's always this kind of this real expert but actually it's something we do together. Let's be honest, if you look around you in your church, in your congregation, let's say your clergy or lay people, there are people who are, frankly, better at doing the Christian walk than I am. You know, of course there are. You know, you may have an asylum seeker in your congregation who is amazingly faithful in spite of extraordinary pressures on them. And you think, if I was in their situation, would I be as faithful to Jesus? And the answer is no, probably not. So in terms of Christian maturity, who's the more mature? They are. There's other strengths that maybe I have, but that's the community idea, that it's not the sort of the expert, the vicar, or whoever, and everyone else. It's actually something that we do together. And I think, particularly as clergy, we struggle to learn that. When I was at Pudsey Parish, some of you are here tonight, my wife, she was ill before then. She was ill from when I arrived there, but she was very poorly and she developed breast cancer. And it developed and it advanced. And I was also at St. John's Pharmacy as well, at both. And then I came here and she died 6 months later. So I was here for 6 months and that's my story. So one of the fascinating things about that, of course, was that I had to learn to receive in a very profound way. I have two kids, 5 and 9 at the time. And I was, you know, trying to learn to run a parish. And so I had to learn about reciprocity, that it wasn't me in control all the time, that I actually had to learn to rely on others. And I realized there was people out there in the community who had extraordinary gifts of help and caring and all sorts of things that I didn't really have. You know, who could clean houses in a way that I couldn't do, who could wash and do all the practical stuff that I just couldn't do, who could make lasagna. Or whatever it was, shepherd's pie. We went through a phase of it was always lasagna, shepherd's pie, or chicken pie. But we got used to that. The point is that we do it in community. I'm not the expert because I'm in ministry. I was the receiver of their care. And we had, you know, I then moved here and it sort of continued on in a different sort of way here at St. Wilfrid's. And the point is we're in it together. You know, we're in it together. Jesus doesn't look at it in terms of having a dog collar mean that you've got it all sorted in terms of discipleship. It doesn't work like that. Frankly, some of us clergy really need to get back and start enjoying being Christians a bit more. And not be, do you know what I mean? That's really important that we understand and we can learn. So there are these two streams, and I'm going to stick with the sort of the two, the learning stream, because I think that is actually really important, and then the practical apprenticeship stream. And I want to just look at those. And then think a bit about that. And we're going to have a time of a discussion at the end. So, learning. How do we do it? Well, I think that there are some, you know, it's really helpful to have a kind of Christian discipleship program. We need to have that, don't we? And, you know, you may use Pilgrim. That might be something that you use. Or you might use Alpha. You might use Start, Moving On, Jesus-Shaped People. I just thought for a couple of minutes, I'll just say what we do and you can reflect on that. I've done Alpha in the past, and I really like Alpha, but I find it's hard to replicate. It's this intense, fantastic experience involving food and fellowship, but it's the sort of what next question that I find is always a bit of a challenge. with Alpha. And so what we do here is we start with the Start course, which has come from the north of England, from Bradford, and it's only 6 weeks. So it's sort of, the commitment is not that big. We don't tend to have food with it. I've got John here, and if I had more time, I'd get John to talk about it, because John is the expert. John is our reader, but and John has done more Start courses than me, and he's really great at it. But the point is, that's what we do. We do Start. It's usually with coffee and cake. And it can be during the day or in the evening. And then once we've done that, normally we try to go on to moving on, which is another short 7-week course. And this is really about discipleship, and it comes out of the north, and we find that works well. At the moment, all of our home groups are doing this. Okay, so every home group is doing it. And I think as a starting point in terms of discipleship, that's a really good thing to do. Choose one of these things and get everyone to do it in your church. Before you can do it with people who are new, you need to do it yourselves with your core people, whether it's Alpha or whatever. And so we do that. And then once we've done moving on, we move that group right into a home group, but their own home group. We form a new home group. So we don't try to integrate them into existing groups. We form a new group. Because what we find is that if they've stuck together, they've built relationships. And to then graft them into another group it doesn't seem to work for us. They don't seem to stick with other groups. So we just keep them together. And preferably to start with the same leaders who work with them. Some of you may not have small groups. We have a kind of a small group model. So we have 6 adult groups and 2 youth small groups. And that's how it works. So everything's done. And that's how the pastoral care really happens in the church. So we find that really helpful. And you may have another way. That's fine. But that's what we do. And I think from my experience from John, I would say, would you say it's pretty effective? At the moment, we're doing Start with 10 adults at the vicarage. Coffee and cake, 7:45 to 9 o'clock. So they're mostly parents who, they don't want to do it at 7. 7:45, they can just about get there. And it's lovely home-baked cakes with, not by me, with coffee and then the session. So that's what we do. And the whole church is doing moving on. The other thing I just want to talk about is Jesus-shaped people. Because that's a process that we've done as a church. And we've gone through about 3 different... we did the main program, which is a 15-week program. It's designed for estate churches and inner-city churches. We are obviously not that. So if it can work for us, it can probably work anywhere. I know Rani's done it, and there's others here. Michael? Father Michael? No? There's 1 or 2 others who have, I think. No, okay. You're doing it? Yeah. So it kind of cuts across, and there's 5 focuses, and they're the priorities of Jesus. People, teaching, prayer, justice, and team building. They're your 5. And then there's another one about the Spirit and there's team building, which is one that we've just been trialed. And if you want to find out about that, Gordon Day or Paul Walker is the person to talk to, because Paul developed a lot of the resources. So, it's great, and I think that for your average Church of England church, is there an average Church of England church? Anyway, for most Church of England churches, Jesus-shaped people works really well, because it's come out of the Church of England, so they have collects, and they have worship ideas, and they have a whole children's program that's been developed, and developed by Dawn, who works for Leeds Diocese, and others. It's all there. And it's all on the internet, and it is free. I'm just putting that out there and saying I would recommend it. However you decide to do it, there's some ideas. That's about the courses, and I think that's really important. But just shifting, remember we're talking about apprenticeship and how important apprenticeship is. I just want to sort of take us a bit further on just than doing courses, because that's kind of what we do. We have our pastoral care small groups, and then we go on. And I think there's 2 really interesting areas of development, or 3 actually, that I want to look at. The first is fresh expressions. Because fresh expressions is all about doing things a bit differently, and they're often in contexts that maybe don't have the parish system, they tend to be quite intentional about discipleship. And so some of the resources that come out of them are really helpful and really good, because they're on the edge, and they grad, like Messy Church is an example where it was on the edge, and now it's sort of really mainstream. But that happens in a lot of other areas with fresh expressions as well. So they have the sort of ethos is kind of belonging, behaving, and believing. You know, they're not really as bothered about people believing to start with. They don't necessarily go down the Christian basics courses to start with. They give people a taste of God and then move them in, if that makes sense. And hopefully, as time goes on, they'll pick up the Spirit, the Holy Spirit will work in their lives, they'll be impressed, and then they'll want to find out more, and then they'll make a commitment. But do you see how it's flipped around? And I think Fresh Expressions is a really interesting thing for us to think about in terms of how we make disciples. The second is maybe a bit surprising, and that is mega churches. You think, really? Well, the reality is, particularly in the US, they've actually been thinking about discipleship in a more formal way for quite a long time. They have more resources, and they also don't have the parish system that we have, so that they have to be really intentional about discipleship, because that's what they do. Much more than, you know what I mean? If you have 2,000 people and they're your people that you work with, but not really the parish sense, people come in and they work with them quite a lot. And they also have Christian institutions that are really good for studying about discipleship. But the interesting thing from an apprenticeship model is that there are certain ones where they've moved beyond the idea that we just get a big group of people in church and hope for the best. And they've really started to develop some interesting ways of doing small groups, very intentional small groups, not dissimilar to John Wesley. You know, sort of really small groups of accountability. And that seems to be a big theme within some of these large churches. The second area that's really interesting, the particular one movement, which is Bethel, it's a Vineyard church, isn't it? Is that right? Or Bethel Church in Redding, California. And they reflect a sort of new wave of kind of charismatic churches, and they have a really, really big focus on healing and going out. Now, you might think, well, that's over in the other side. They have 10,000 people in their church. It's a big church, and they have a wonderfully named college called the School of Supernatural Ministry. That's it. And they go and they pray for people on the streets and that kind of thing. The really interesting thing is, first of all, that it seems to me it's predominantly lay-led. And the sacrament that they're interested in is healing in the way that perhaps we have a Eucharistic focus in our sacramental theology and also baptism and so on. They have a big focus on healing. So they would go and pray for people, and, you know, a sacrament is something on the outside that reflects something on the inside. Well, as they pray and people are healed, that is their sacrament. The fascinating thing is it has a really big impact on the Church of England because of new wine. So whereas we think, well, actually, it's quite influential here because most of the large charismatic evangelical churches that are involved in new wine, and it's not just, it's worship music and healing, the two sort of things that come on. So I went to a new wine with Sue and perhaps one or two others, New Wine Leaders Conference in Harrogate 2 years ago during the big deep freeze or whatever it was called. The Beast from the East? Last year. And it was unbelievable, and it was, you know, and it was on during that, the worst bit of that. So it was like snowing and blizzard and stuff like that. And this guy, Chris Wollaton, or I think his name was, the head of this school, came over and did the talks. So there's like 1,400 leaders there, probably half clergy, half lay leaders. And he came across and he did these talks. And what was really interesting was that, frankly, it was a bit hard to follow the thread. But what he was doing really was he was talking about their experience as a church of going out and seeing people healed and the impact it had on the community. So the emphasis was on, okay, here's what you do, go and do it. It's the apprenticeship model. And it's kind of really influential, actually, through New Wine and other means where healing is a big thing. And so, you know, apprenticeship is in these large, successful churches in the US. I mean, they're successful for all sorts of reasons, partly because they're very savvy. They know what they're doing. They're very slick. But they're also, you know, there is this sort of theme that's there. And the final one, I mean, obviously, does anyone know what church that is? Rolf, where is that?
That's
Holt, St. Luke's Holbeck. I didn't want to put this church on. But, you know, we all have these opportunities for apprenticeship, don't we? And we find it really difficult to get leaders for children's groups on a Sunday morning. It's really difficult. And when you talk to potential leaders, do you know what they say? They say, what if the kids know more than we do? What if the kids know more than we do? On the other hand, messy church, where there's lots of different roles. You can be on craft, you can be on cooking. That's a thriving team. And we've got loads of leaders, some who have only, you know, recently come into the life of the church. And so even locally, this apprenticeship idea is really key. What does it look like to get a slightly more balanced view? Well, I think there's a couple of themes that come out of it. The first is that I think we have to change our orientation from a clergy-led thing to a lay-led thing. I really think that's important, because apprenticeship models, it's not about being ordained. It really isn't. This is about God being at work in people's lives. And frankly, there are some people in my church who are way ahead of me. You know, when I get up to heaven, they're going to be, and I'm going to be, because their whole life is reflect, you know, Christian maturity. So let's just ditch the whole ordained / lay thing of, you know, let's get over that and start seeing discipleship for what it is, which is about leading someone to be more mature in Jesus, whoever we are. I think that's really key. Secondly, I think it's important to say that apprenticeship is still informed by learning. We don't want to decide not to focus on, you know, be renewed by the transforming of your mind is still really important, isn't it? That we learn and we grow. So that's still an important part of it. I don't want to sort of ditch that. But it's about what we're learning and how we're learning. And I suppose the third thing is to say that we do perhaps need to redefine our understanding of what maturity is. You know, very clearly, it is not this intellectual ascent. It's about walking in a way that really transforms lives and sees people come to faith. That is what discipleship and in the apprenticeship model is all about. And that is for all of us, whether we're ordained, not ordained, new to the faith, Anglo-Catholic, you know, liberal Catholic, central Anglican, evangelical, whatever we are, you know what I mean? It's for all of us. That's the sort of model. And I think it's particularly important for those churches, say, in the inner city, where maybe people actually haven't been to university and doing like a full-on sort of, you know, a course is really challenging. And actually, there's these people who are real gems, but they may not have those opportunities because we're still operating on this model of university-educated sort of focus, and it really affects us. And so it's quite a systemic change that's needed right from the start of our training, actually, to go right through and to focus on that.